The conversation of your life, local, relevant, digital, and always on.
America will hear my two cents.
Elected to serve iHub radio listeners across the desert cities. He calls it as he sees it.
Quick question.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
Someone answer him now!
All right, welcome to the Russ Betts Show, coming to you from downtown Palm Springs, California. That's Palm Springs in California, not Florida. We come to you here every Sunday morning, starting at 8 a.m., and then continuing on until 10 a.m. So if you're just joining us now, it's you're at the 9 a.m. hour. We've got a whole nother exciting hour to go. We just finished up with a lot of conversation on the coronavirus. What else is everybody talking about? It's good information there, some good commentary. And you can catch that on a rebroadcast of our podcast. It's easy to do. Just go into Google and type the Russ Betts Show podcast, and there it comes. It's just what an amazing world we live in. So anyhow, we're going to shift gears a little bit. Well, maybe we won't. It's on everybody's mind, but we're going to talk to a gentleman who, he's just written a book called How to Kill a Mockingturd, Allow Him to Do It Himself. And it's a part of a four-book series, and we're just going to let him introduce himself. Bill, well, I'll give you the introduction. Bill, welcome to the Russ Betts Show.
Thanks, Russ.
Good to have you with us.
Glad to be here, and hopefully a good conversation on the subject of the day.
Okay. So for our listeners, Bill is a real good friend. I've known him for years. I actually consider him a mentor, helping me as I've learned the ropes of city government. Bill, you were the mayor of San Marcos, probably the youngest mayor I remember, and you've certainly got a lot of experience and development and things that cross a council member's desk. So first off, thank you again for all the help that you've given me over the years.
Thanks, Russ. A little correction. I was the mayor of Buena Park.
Oh, Buena Park. All that, and I didn't get that right. Sorry about that. So you've got this book out now. Does any of it ring true now? So much has changed from when you wrote this to now. We've got all this situation going on where, I mean, it's a whole different world out there. You have any regrets about writing this book? Anything changed? Anything that doesn't fit anymore?
Well, a lot of things are changing. And, of course, that first four series began on Inauguration Day, and I followed it all the way through to the impeachment. And these books are meant to be historical reference books, and they're principally articles from all the various news sources, the New York Times, CNN, Fox, all the various news stations, and I upload them on every day. I spend 4 to 5 hours in my home office putting these things together. So the first four books concluded with impeachment, and then I began a second series of four books called The Aftermath, Pathway to the White House, and it's scheduled to end on Election Day. I've already finished two books. They're out now. Amazon handles all of these books, and I'm in the process of writing the third one right now.
Well, Bill, you're on in years. You've seen some of this world. You've come to this writing project with a lot of experience. Do you mind telling everybody how old you are?
No, I don't mind at all. I'm approaching 90. I'll be 90 August 4th of this year, and I'm planning a big party of friends and former business associates and our family, which is pretty good size, and looking forward to that. It's on August the 4th of this year. I've been around a while, and of course I came into this world during the Great Depression, born in 1930, so I've certainly witnessed a lot, but nothing like we're going through right now.
You know, I remember the conversations with my grandmother when she was still alive, and she would have been way older than 90 right now. And but her, everything in her being was the shock that hit and what she went through in the Great Depression. And I contrast that to what I grew up with, where everything was an e-ticket at Disneyland, and it's just, you know, had a great time. Everything was handed to you. You had no worries. And now this is for the first time, I think, for a lot of people are experiencing something like this. What are we looking at?
Yeah, it's really tough. And, you know, my memory goes back. My dad was a railroad man, and he lost his job. And to try to make ends meet, he and his brothers went around chopping down trees and cutting up firewood, selling it, and doing everything else they could to try to keep food on the table. So it was a tough time.
You know, I've got a friend who lives in Wuxi, China, where I used to live, Malu. I covered in a little bit of detail what he's been talking about. We've actually been following him on the show as they've gone through this. And they're basically in China coming out on the other side of this. And, you know, they had a lot of economic disruption. But he says they're back to work. The pubs, the stores, the restaurants are open. The factories are back to work, have been for 3 weeks. And they're starting to churn things out again. Of course, their biggest market, the United States, is having a bit of a trouble right now. So maybe they're not going to be doing so well.
Yeah, well, it's affecting everybody around the world. And right now, as we're talking, the Senate is still in session trying to figure out this bailout package that they're trying to put together to rescue everybody because our economy is in the tank.
Yeah, and I guess where I was going with that was, you know, we came out of the Great Depression eventually. Everything, you know, we've had good times, ups and downs. Eventually, you get to the other side of it. And that's what Malu was saying is, hey, I'm on the other side of it now. I can go down to the pub again. Everything's, you know, the restaurants are open again where life has returned to this city. But it strikes me.
Go ahead. I'm just going to say the same thing's going to happen here. It's just a matter of time. And we all have to keep our heads and do what they tell us to do, which is. Right now, unfortunately, we have to distance ourselves from all of our friends and family. You know, we went to the store yesterday morning at 7 o'clock and everybody is doing what they're supposed to, staying 6 feet apart and you know, not running into anybody. And so everybody's coping.
Yeah, well, you know, a big difference, I think, between China and here is that the government, the Senate's meeting, as you said, trying to figure out how they're going to bail everybody out. And I think it's safe to say that one of the problems the Chinese aren't having is their people being destitute because they couldn't go, you know, a paycheck. They were able to survive a paycheck. Most of them have $20,000-$30,000 saved. They just save. So when they have to stay home for a month, essentially what they went through, no big deal. They had to spend a little bit of their money, but they were pretty frugal anyhow during that time, and they came out of it personally, economically okay. Americans miss one paycheck. There was an article out there a $400 bill puts them in a big hurt. So, you know, we've got that going on here.
Right. Most of them don't have more than $200 in the bank, which is kind of scary. Everybody is spend, and now that we've got a disaster on our hands, why... you know, they're looking back and wondering why they did all that.
Well, what's another $1 trillion in debt, right?
I mean, this whole thing is just, you know, the government is just really, it's kind of frightening. Usually you kind of depend on your government being somewhat stable. But right now, it you look at it, it's like a Keystone Comedy.
Yeah, well, let's use that as a segue to get into some of your book, because they obviously, when it's got a title like How to Kill a Mockingbird, Allow Him to Do It Himself, it's not real complimentary of a current commander-in-chief and president. What's your take on how things are handling with him?
Oh, it's, you know, I could go on and on, which I don't want to waste time between. All I can tell you is I know that I'm not alone, and he is so inept at doing what he's doing. And, you know, all of us, if anyone had, by the way, each of my books, what I'm just going about to say, each of my books contain a photograph of Donald Trump signing my first edition book, Art of the Deal. I was standing in the lobby of Trump Tower when he was signing his books. My daughter took my picture. I ran across the street to a bookstore, bought the book, got over to the lobby, muscled my way in, and shoved the book in front of him, and he autographed my book. So I have it sitting on my shelf here in my home library, and it's quite a keepsake. And every one of the books contains that photograph showing his autograph with his famous signature. And I... the value of that book right now. I talked to a book dealer, and it's quite valuable. Anyway.
Well, you know, there's some people that feel so strongly about the president that they would have taken that book and thrown it in the trash. They wouldn't want to have it anywhere near him. But I think you probably made the wise choice hanging on to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's good. It may go up in value quite a bit. Anyway, back to the subject. He's doing a terrible job. I mean, it's frightening how bad he's doing.
You know, you got people on the other side of the equation of that sentiment saying that he's doing exactly what should be done in this case, that he's doing a perfect job or near perfect job.
Oh, absolutely. He's got a base that just won't listen to anything. And, it's amazing to me that people can see what's going on and they just don't accept the fact that he is the world's worst when it comes to being a president.
Well, we'll leave it at that. So where's the next series of books going? Or do I need to ask? It sounds like that we can tell. What is it, just more of the same as far as, you know, criticizing him? Or, you know, what can I look forward to in the next series of books? I've read a few of your books already. You've got 30 out now, right?
Right. And 32, I think. But anyway, what this one does, this picks up, the first book starts with the big, long, two-hour speech he gave the day after he was acquitted of impeachment. And it will carry on. The four-book series will carry on, and it will end on Election Day, November the 3rd.
It is really an amazing historical reference. I mean, I guess you're going to have these, and you know, those will be, when you look back and see what happened in these years and everybody's talking about it, you're going to see there it is. And one thing I know about you, Bill, is that you are detailed, researched, study. I mean, I could give examples over the years that where you've proved to be exactly 100% correct, and when everybody else was looking the other way. So that's for sure.
Well, these books definitely are reference books for the ages, and it just covers it all the way through. And like I said, articles from all of the major news outlets are uploaded, and it follows it through on a day-by-day basis. I spend about 4 to 5 hours every day researching all the articles and loading them into the books.
Okay, so they're all available on Amazon, and certainly a recommended read. It's either available on Kindle or as a hard copy if you want to get it, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, so let's just take a little time here. You said the stores were orderly where you are. It's not exactly the case down here. They put the little tape there to tell people to stay 6 feet away. People didn't quite figure out what that meant. But you say everything's, you're getting along okay. Family's doing good. No problem, huh?
Oh, yeah. And, we live in a small, relatively small town. The Safeway is, it's only been here about 2 years. Very well organized. Very well done. We have seen no evidence of all of the hoarding and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's good news, because it's been rampant down here. Bill, I got to go. We're up against the break. I really thank you for coming on again, and we'll be sure and get those books on Amazon. How to Kill a Mockingturd, Allow Him to Do It Himself by Bill Effinger. We're back with more. Bill, thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
And there it is.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
All right, welcome back to the Russ Betts Show. Just finished up a call with Bill Effinger, who has a series of books out on President Trump, How to Kill a Mockingturd is the title of the book, and a decidedly critical view of the president. Bill going as far as to say he's the worst president we've ever had. Obviously, other people take a different view. You know, we try not to get into too much of that here on the Russ Betts Show. You open up those lines, and it's like there's some topics you just don't discuss, and And so we don't take too hard a line on any of that. But anyhow, it was a really good conversation. Bill's an old friend, been around, certainly been around long enough to, well, he lived through the Great Depression, understood what that was. And we're certainly going through that now. Anyhow, it's a good conversation. Tune into the podcast if you missed it. Very informational. And so we're going to move on. That was all supposed to be a segue to say that, well, not everybody hates the president, and what are the actual numbers? And I've got the polling data here. There's something called the Daily Presidential Tracking Poll. Now, there used to be a few of these out there. There's only one now, the Rasmussen poll. And, you know, you can dispute with the numbers, but the ups or the downs, as long as they're consistent in how they're tracking it, it at least becomes a barometer. You know, you got the temperature gauge out there on the wall that tells you how warm it is outside. And if it's 110, you know it's warm. And if it's 50, you know it's cold. At least here in Palm Springs, that's what's considered cold. So you have this daily presidential tracking poll, which basically lets you know. And it says, President Trump ended the polling week with a daily job approval rating of 46%. Now, they ask a bunch of questions here, and it says a sizable majority of Americans plan to spend most of their time at home in the weeks ahead in response to the coronavirus threat, but many will continue to go to the office. And so this is what they told us, and we're going to review last week's key polls. And so the presidential tracking poll has him at 46%. But then they went in and asked Americans a bunch of other questions, and so we're going to let you know what they said. 1 in 4 voters are prepared already to postpone the November election. 1 in 4 is 25%. And that would be the first time that's been done in U.S. history. There's a whole bunch of people who are figuring that maybe that's going to happen. But anyhow, 25% said they're okay with that. Support is much higher for delaying the primaries. We've already had some primaries delayed, and so apparently people aren't too upset with that notion. Well, they can be upset as they want. They've already delayed some of them. And they said Americans plan to continue to grocery shop in the face of the coronavirus threat, and most aren't worried that food or other necessary items will become hard to find. The other conclusions of these polls this week are Americans strongly support the government's travel bans and school closings in response to the coronavirus threat, but 1 in 4 think panic, not reason, is driving decisions. So 25% think this is all overblown. They're agreeing with the Stanford medical guy. And then given China's silence and secrecy about the outbreak of the coronavirus, a sizable number of voters think the Asian giant, China, needs to pay up for some of the losses the virus has caused. They think, you didn't tell us about it, so you need to pay up. And they think that would be a thing to do. Let's see, what do we got here? Americans are only slightly more concerned about their personal safety as the coronavirus pandemic grows, but they're noticeably less confident that the U.S. healthcare system can deal with the problem. So they think they're going to be okay, but they don't think the U.S. healthcare system is going to keep up with whatever's going to be coming at it. And 42% of likely U.S. voters think the country is headed in the right direction. I took a poll. I participated in the CBS YouGov poll and what's the one that's been out there? The Nielsen poll. Not the Nielsen. It's the I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank. Anyhow, it's one of the Gallup poll. There it is. And for some reason, I've been on their list of contacts, so I've been doing that for years. And one of the questions was, do you think the economy is on the right track? And you're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, how the heck do you answer that one? I mean, everything's crashing and tanking, and you want to say, no, it's not on the right track. We're crashing, we're tanking. But I think a whole bunch of other people say, well, you know, let's put that in perspective. This is a temporary blip. Maybe people figure we're going to come out of it. And so anyhow, surprisingly, 42% of likely U.S. voters think the country is headed in the right direction. Now, maybe that's not just all economics. I don't know. Anyhow, so we'll dig into this just a little bit deeper. We've got, what do we got here? We got 1 in 4 voters are prepared to postpone the November elections. We got that part. 5 states have postponed their primaries so far because of coronavirus. And This is all a survey, by the way, of 1,000 likely voters. That's how they do these surveys. You wonder how the heck can they come up with these results when they only survey 1,000 out of about 350 million of us. But it's all very scientific. What they tell you is they've got a margin of error plus or minus 3 percentage points that gives them a 95% level of confidence. Americans strongly support the government's travel bans, meaning you can't come to this country from other countries that have, like we've cut off all the travel from Europe and China. And they're in favor of the school closings. What's interesting is that Republicans are slightly more supportive of postponing upcoming primaries than Democrats. But Democrats, 48% according to this poll, think it's quite an okay idea. All right, we'll get back to a little bit more of this. We've got a half hour to go here on the Russ Betts Show. Good to have you with us, and, stick around for more.
The conversation of your life. Local, relevant, digital, and always on.
America will hear my two cents.
Elected to serve iHub radio listeners across the desert cities. He calls it as he sees it.
Quick question.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
Someone answer him now!
Okay, welcome back to the Russ Show. Finishing up the last half hour here with you. We're going to get into some listener comments, things we've gathered over the week. We do have you write in. Happy to have you do so. You can reach us here at, the easiest thing to do is just go to iHubRadio.com. I don't need to confuse you with a bunch of complicated directions when you can just go to the website and look it up. Most of you must know how to navigate a website and the internet. So, I was on a conference call that the governor set up for elected officials all over the state of California, and it didn't quite go well. It started out with, it was just so that everybody could get a briefing out of the governor's staff. He wasn't on the line himself, but his chief of staff was there and some other people that are very influential and important in his administration. And they set up this conference call so that all the elected officials could hear a briefing that wasn't like you hear when the media is asking questions. The media tends to be off on a little different track than maybe what elected officials want to hear. We want to hear certain things that pertain to us and how we do our jobs, but that might be a little boring for the, the 6 o'clock news or not exactly fitting what the news feels that it needs to get out there. So briefing was set up. So I knew there was trouble when I call in and it says, "Hi, welcome to AT&T teleconference." That's who they used. And it says, "Please, when you hear the tone, announce your name." And I'm thinking, this isn't going to work. So I just sat back and listened, because as soon as I heard got chimed into the conference call, first thing I heard was a tone, like a little bell sound. And then I hear what was 2,000 elected officials, one by one or all simultaneously, saying, Russell Betts, Desert Hot Springs, City of Desert Hot Springs. I mean, you heard all these cities going in, but only once in a while you could actually hear somebody. The rest of it was just this incredible amount of chatter. And people had their phones on, hadn't yet muted them, so you can hear kids in the background, multiplied by, 2,500 times the noise and people introducing themselves. And then soon came out the calls to mute your phones. And, that started out as a polite, but as the frustration grew, it got to be a pretty harsh, "Hey, people, mute your phones." And then, of course, other people chiming in saying, "Yeah, mute your phones," which only added to the confusion and made it worse. So the problem was everybody wasn't on mute to start with. The conference call wasn't set up right. And they tried their best. After about 10 minutes of this with just, they started, we're going to start. It seemed like it quieted down. And then, of course, somebody chimes in late. They hear this message, "Please introduce yourself," and doing what they're supposed to do is what they were told to do. They're in the middle of giving this brief, and you got somebody saying, "Hi, Mayor of Watsonville," or "Mayor of wherever," announcing themselves and interrupting. And it just got to be to the point where they had to cut it short. It just wasn't working. And I'm sitting there going, I don't have anything else to do. So I just kept listening to see how long all this commotion was going to take to die down. And Well, it eventually did and got quiet. And I don't know how many of you around remember the old party lines that there used to be out there, but it was quite entertaining to, get on a party line with people. And it's just kind of hard to talk. Everybody's talking over each other. But finally, this conference call settled down to where there was about, I'm going to guess, 10 or 15 of us on there. We actually got to ask some questions. And, there's some real economic considerations going on. And so, as council member, you get hit with this, like, hey, why do I have to shut down? And one of the concerns is the manufacturing, and people have millions of dollars invested in their manufacturing, wanted to know, well, is manufacturing included? So, hey, now that things had quieted down and all, 2,000 people had left and there was only 10 of us, I asked the question. Well, the answer I got back was, well, is that all that matters is money? I mean, we're talking about people dying. And, I guess I'm a little more objective than that. I certainly, it just is automatic that we're concerned about people's health and well-being. But I'm a council member. I got a job to do. And somebody's asking me, hey, I got a lot of money invested in this factory. Are you really sure I need to shut it down? And, I mean, that's a reasonable question to ask. I mean, we got inventory we're going to lose. We're facing hundreds of thousands of dollars of losses. We might not ever start up again. Are you sure that we have to close? So when I go ask that question, and then I get an answer like, oh, is that all you care about is money? I snapped a little bit, not too much, but I told him, you know what? I need a serious answer. I don't really want a bunch of editorial or emotional grief. I just want an answer. And so I did get the answer. And it turns out that, some of the other people that were on the line, county supervisors from across the state, was one supervisor there and a couple other mayors from cities who were well up on the regulation says, no, they don't have to close. So I was glad I hung around because I got my question answered. It's unfortunate that the briefing went that way. But it did. And I guess the only point of all this was when you tell 2,000 people, 2,000 elected officials introduce themselves as they enter a conference call, you better be ready for 2,000 people to introduce themselves because, hey, that's what we do as council members. Hi, this is Russell Betts. I'm a council member of the City of Desert Hot Springs. How are you today? All right. So we've had some letters come in from people. There's this one here. I'm just going to read it to you. This will kind of tell you what people are going through in their lives. It says, as a server at a long-established popular Palm Springs restaurant, I am now indefinitely unemployed. And whether or not they have takeout food or there's someone working on the premises that you may see, many dedicated staff members are going to be without a paycheck indefinitely. And this is during the high season. We're all depending on the majority of our yearly income. I'm not expecting anything except you being informed. This is a destination resort town. This is going to really crush so many people. Now, I'm looking here on the news. We're watching it. Here in the iHub studios, we've got these monitors monitoring every major network. And apparently they're working on a relief package for all of us this person here in particular. And apparently they're talking about a $3,000 check landing in your bank account. Well, how's that? Maybe that's why everybody's out still spending. I don't know. Anyhow, there's supposed to be a $3,000 check coming. So if we're going to get that $3,000 check, and this is all going to turn out to be nothing like the and I don't want to be making light of this stuff, but come on. I mean, you got to have a little fun. But anyhow, if this turns out to be like go away quietly, I just hope they issue that check and don't ask for it back and they get that check issued. But for sure, there's a lot of people out of work. I'm just hoping that, and I know there'll be this day when somebody finally posts online, they're going to say, wow, they opened the restaurant back up. I'm back to work. It sure is good to be working. Wow, do I need this money? The $3,000 check the government came and helped tide me over, but it was looking a little tight there. Unemployment wasn't exactly what I was making before. And, there'll be another, $1 or $2 trillion heaped onto the national debt. Hey, what's another $1 or $2 trillion for our grandchildren to pay? But anyhow, that's how we're going to get through this. Anyhow, so then you get these real positive messages, to dig deep and rise up and meet the challenge. Another message that came in. And so what are you going to do? You're going to step up and meet the challenge, or you're going to roll over and die hoping that something will be better? People need to stop complaining about what they don't have and start realizing what they do have before you don't have it anymore. I guess we're talking about a self-fulfilling prophecy. The choice is 100% up to you at this point. You can either step up and into the light or step off into the darkness. Choose wisely, because you may not get another chance. As has always been my mantra, you can either be part of the solution or part of the problem. The time is now to show us who you are. So question is, who are you? And let's see what we got. Somebody else wrote, there's somebody writing about they're sending checks to Americans. They don't know when it's going to be. Looks like there's going to be one or two checks going out. So somebody's writing to inform me about that. And then here's one is they're asking about, where are the tests? It's so hard to understand that this was an unknown virus. Oh, is it so hard to understand that this was an unknown virus a few months ago? Okay, so this is somebody saying, you know, somebody's asking the question, where are the tests? And this person's saying that, you know, is it really so hard to understand that there aren't any tests right now? I mean, it was an unknown virus a few months ago. And we sold all our manufacturing to China, and they have used, they've used up all the supplies when they had their crisis. And their manufacturing was shut down, so now we're scrambling to get our expletive deleted together. And it's all about the U.S. policy over the last 40 years. We need to do our best to keep our loved ones safe, stop being selfish, follow social distancing guidelines, and stop hoarding so that we don't have such a problem with personal protection equipment. We had a news report on NBC talking about that. And it's actually an interesting subject. You get into it, you look at the... what's happened over the next 40 years. You have people who sit there and think, well, what the heck? Why don't we have masks for the hospitals? Why is everybody in such short supply? Why aren't there testing kits? And you think, you know, you go to this guy and you say, hey, we know you're making these testing kits. He says, well, we used to make all of them for the U.S., or we had a pretty good chunk of the market. And, well, all that shifted off to China, and we kind of eke by, and you know, we produce maybe 100 a week. And they go out there. We got some people to keep us around, but, you know, I can't. How many do you want? Well, we'd like to have 1 million if you could. He goes, 1 million? You know, I got a tool up for that. I can't get you 1 million anything that quick. I got tooling I got to get. So, well, you know, could you have that tooling done next week? No. Usually takes my supplier about 30 days to get the steel he needs. And, of course, with this problem going on, I don't know if the steel mill's running. I guess it is, but... And then I got to have my tool and die guy make it, and he usually takes about 30 days. So maybe 90 days I'll have my tooling in place, and then I got to try and get the raw materials. And says, okay, well, do all that and get us the, and you know, be ready to supply 1 million. And the guy goes, well, wait a minute now. I don't exactly have the cash flow to provide you 1 million. So without belaboring the point, it's not just as simple in manufacturing as snap your finger and you get everything that you need. You know, we shifted a lot during the 90s. We shifted a lot of production overseas, and I happened to be in a position to see it. I was over there. I went and set up a factory in China to supply the Chinese market and Hong Kong with our product that we made. And, you know, taking advantage of a booming and emerging market over there. And the I'm sitting there, and I had a friend of mine. His job was to help American companies set up and operate in China. And back then, it was a lot of people thought, well, the way to go was to do a joint venture with a Chinese company, thinking that got you some advantage of doing business there. We had set ours up as one of the first, actually the first wholly owned foreign enterprise operating in China with an import-export authority. Let's get off conversation for another day. But anyway, my friend, his job was to help these companies come in, and he did okay. You know, he showed them the ropes, showed them what to do, showed them, you know, hey, don't do a joint venture, do a wholly owned operation. And so we're sitting in the Long Bar in Shanghai, having a drink, and he's telling me about work. He says, man, I wish I had the connections that guy had. And so what do you mean? He says, oh, he's got a U.S. senator that he working with him. So it gives him all kinds of gravitas when he goes and talks to the Chinese companies, and he's bringing high-tech business in from China. Well, it turns out, you know, it was Senator John Kerry was advancing the transfer of business from U.S. to China. And he was doing it with a company called Boston Capital and Technology. And I researched all this all the time. I actually put it out as a news story on my page. And oh, my God, my server just exploded. My server said, hey, this is going to cost you more money. You got a lot of hits going on with this story. And you can go look it up, John Kerry Outsourcing. But the point was is that everybody was doing it. I mean, even to the point that congressmen, and I'm sure the Republicans doing it too. I just happen to know that it was, you know, I just happened to be in the right place at the right time to see it was John Kerry doing it. And I called up Paul Marcos at Boston Capital and Technology. I called him on the phone, and he didn't really want to hear from me. I got some quotes out of him, and anyhow. That's all for another day. So, you know, we did it to ourselves, cut off our manufacturing. And, all right, well, we'll be back. That's enough ranting about that. This is Russ Betts on iHeartRadio.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub, he calls it as he sees it. The Russ Betts Show. Call 760-544-TALK. Now, here's Russ Betts.
Yeah, we're on. We're on. We have Nita Rufus walking in, getting prepped for her show. That's coming up next. And, you know, you're going to want to stick around for that. The lovable liberal, she calls herself, and liberal or conservative. It is the most darned informative show, and I'm really happy to share this studio with Anita Rufus. I've listened to her for a long, long time, long before I ever thought of doing a radio show, and always a good listen. And so you'll want to stay tuned for that coming up immediately following the Russ Betts Show. But we're going to get back to here. You know, we have a particular affection for truckers. They do a lot of hard work. We got a friend we check in with from time to time, Trucker Gabriel. And Gabriel, if you're listening, I know I meant to call you and put you on the show, but I've been gabbing so much I never got to you. But I'm going to put in the good word for truckers that you would have given us. You know, there's a saying, if you got it, a truck brought it. And wow, as these store shelves are empty and we're waiting for our toilet paper or whatever else it is you guys are hoarding, you know, we're going, hey, where's that truck? Where's that truck? And all of a sudden we just love truckers. There's a town in Kentucky that realized that truckers were having a hard time. You know, they're out on the road. They've got to eat and they usually pull in. But when all the restaurant closings, they got nowhere to eat. Or where what is open, they can't get their truck to because, you know, the truck doesn't pull very far off the highway. They're down the interstate and into the truck stop, everything geared towards where a truck can go. And, you know, the drive-through at the local In-N-Out or whatever else it is, the truck just won't fit through the drive-through lane. So the cops in this town in Kentucky said, you know what, we recognize this problem. So they have offered to go above and beyond to make sure that drivers get fed. And they're going down there, approaching the driver and saying, hi, I can either drive you to the drive-through if you like, give you a ride in the car, or we'll go up and get it for you. Now, what a nice thing that is. So, you know, if you're down at one of the truck stops and you notice that, you know, the restaurant's closed, but you happen to know where there's some food, I don't know, is it too much to say go help one of these drivers? And, you know, some other issues going on in Pennsylvania. They thought it'd be a good idea in response to the coronavirus to shut down the truck stops. And, of course, the drivers are going, okay, well, not only do I got to feed, I got to eat, I also have to take care of some other business. And if you shut down the rest stop, well, now what am I going to do? Now, they're not thinking this thing through. They always, you know, anyhow. So I actually called PennDOT and talked to him. I was trying to get her on the show, the director of the public information officer for PennDOT. I wanted to get her on the show here to talk to her about this because I didn't think they were being real nice to the truckers. They shut down the rest stop. Now what do they do? You got to think this thing through. So shut it down for all the cars if you want to, but we got to make some special considerations for these truckers. And it's nice that this town in Kentucky's doing that. All right, now before I get too far along, I want to make sure I get to this positive message. I did get an email from my friend in Wuxi. And last week he sent me a video that showed the streets of Wuxi and it says Wuxi is busy again. And I got this video where, you know, showing the traffic and everything, life returning back to the city in China. And I used to live there. Now he's there. I'm not. So I asked him, hey, Malou, can you give me an update? So I'm going to read that to you. And this morning. You know, hey, glad to hear from you. Good news that you and Maine are doing well. I'm letting you know that Wuxi is back to normal again. Everything is opening slowly. The restaurants, the bars are all open again. I think everything in China is getting back to normal again. I even read in the news that Wuhan, which is affected the worst, in the last 4 days, they haven't found any cases, so they're going to start opening up too. Now, during the crisis, Malou explained to me, he says, you know, where I'm at, it's locked down, but in Wuhan, it's like a prison. He was really glad he wasn't there. Anyway, his assessment is that China did a good job. They have so many people, but they still made it under control. They were very strict about things. During this virus serious period, not many people went out. Nobody gathered around, and everybody wore a mask. Everybody was wearing a mask. You know, Americans, we got some thing about wearing a mask. I'm wearing one. Everywhere I go in public, I'm wearing a mask. And forget this nonsense they're telling you that it doesn't work. And you can make your own mask. Anything will help. We won't get into that debate. But he said, actually, the situation was not very good in China. He said, for 2 weeks, I was in the home in quarantine. I didn't go out. It was really tough to be in the house for that long. Said, you know, I didn't go to the grocery store. One person in our family did it. And, but, you know, they scanned you when you went out. They took your temperature. You had a card that made sure where you were going. You had to have a photo with you, photo ID, or you didn't get back in the building. And so, you know, things were a little different. And anyhow, so the situation's there now improved. And he says, advice to Americans, by the way, there is nothing to be ashamed of in wearing a mask and gloves in public. Safety is very important. He says they're still wearing a mask when they go out. I guess they slip it out of the way to take a swig of the beer, but to put the mask back on. And he says, take care, my dear friend, and stay safe. That's advice to everybody. You know, first off, I think the message here is that we're going to get through this one. And, we're going to see the other side of this. We've got a storm brewing right now. Can hear that thunder rumbling on the horizon, and we know there's going to be a storm coming through and might be a little intense, but eventually we're going to get through to the other side of this. And for sure the economy is wrecked, and I'm looking at people like Bill Maher. I mean, here's a guy who's got a net worth of $100 million, and he is never ever going to suffer from a crashed economy. He probably has one of these doomsday bunkers that he can go to, well stocked with everything he could possibly need. And here's this quote. I'm hoping for a crashing economy so we can get rid of Trump. Bring on the recession. I wonder if he's regretting those words, seeing how devastating this is to people's lives right now. I would love to see that guy. I don't know what I'd say to him if I saw him. I'd probably be a big, you know, F you. Isn't it that way always with people who are so completely and totally out of touch with what the rest of us have to go through. I noticed that there's a lot of people that are pretty darn influential that at a time when you can't get a test kit, wow, they sure seem to have been getting their tested already. I was looking at a couple of things people posted on Instagram saying, you know, I didn't have any symptoms, but I was kind of worried about it, and so I decided I was going to go get tested, and, well, I guess they were such an influential person and so famous and everything that they were able to just march right in wherever those people go and got tested right away. Wasn't that nice? Here's people who have symptoms and are told, well, we're not going to test because the test kits are in short supply, but you with no symptoms can come on here. And he actually puts this Instagram. I don't know his name. I should have remembered it. And I didn't. So anyhow, there's going to be help. There's people that are really stressed out about evictions. I think all this is going to get taken care of. One thing we know is that Americans are not in very good shape as far as savings go and being able to weather a storm like this financially. Congress is working on it. We will get through the other side of this. That is for certain. We don't know what's it going to be like in the middle. We're waiting on this next 10 days. It's critical. We'll be back with you in the next week at this time on the Russ Betts Show. Here with you for 2 hours every Sunday morning to wake you up on a Sunday. And you can catch us on the podcast or the rebroadcast if you missed hour one or you're just checking in now and missed hour two. Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, coming up next. This is Russ Betts signing off from the Russ Betts Show for another week. And stay safe, wear your mask, wash your hands, and stay home.